One of the biggest movies of the year has audiences and critics divided. Today we're talking about Joker. This is Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Welcome to episode 26 of Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. This is Scott, and today we're talking about Todd Phillips' Joker. And I did review this movie already, so I think some people might be wondering, oh, why are we having a podcast episode about it? But it's more because I wanted to address the comments that I got from people, and I think it's interesting in terms of expanding the discussion, because I think it helps to explain perhaps the reaction that I and some people who were critical like me had versus kind of general audiences. And I just wanted to take some time to address that. So without any further ado, here we go. So my first big critique of Joker was that I didn't think it had much to say thematically. So it introduces a lot of ideas. It talks about income inequality or systemic poverty and, you know, kind of a crumbling social support system for people, and there's a lot of pointed lines within the film, and even the final monologue by the lead character is definitely emphasizes, like, well, you know, kind of like, I'm the end result. This is what you get if, you know, a society just pushes somebody too far. And I think that was I just thought it was something. It's like, well, if you're going to keep hammering this home, if you're going to make a social movement around this character, shouldn't it say something about it? And I don't know that it said anything in particular. I think it just said, like, doesn't this suck? Which is quickly becoming a pet peeve of mine, because it doesn't really take a look at the structures and how, you know, decisions made at the top kind of trickle their way down, which, again, in the 80s would make perfect sense, considering it's the era of trickle-down economics and how much mental health systems in America were just gutted at that point, especially by the Reagan administration. It's a big point. It's actually, for me, it's actually interesting because it is a plot point in the comic series A Deadly Class, and the whole idea is that this kid is, I'm forgetting the lead character's name, but this kid is, he has a mission that he wants to become an assassin. He's being trained to become one because he wants to kill Ronald Reagan, because essentially somebody was let out of an institution during that era and jumped to commit suicide and killed his parents as a result. And so that's his entire motivation. And here, you know, there do seem to be some systemic failures that, you know, take our protagonist and turn him into a, you know, a psychopath and a murderer, but it's not really well documented. It's like there's references to medication. He goes to therapy, but it doesn't seem like it's actually working. And so that was what didn't work for me. And that's my personal perspective. What I noticed was that anybody who liked the movie seemed to like the feeling. They felt like it invoked, it really puts you in the headspace of the lead character, and that it was a relatable situation to kind of be in such a rough situation and not feel like you have any options. And that makes sense, because I could definitely empathize with that, and a lot of that comes from Joaquin Phoenix's performance. And so there is, I can, you know, as much as people are talking about, like, oh, being violent takes some sort of, you know, violent power fantasies, and what is this message sending to people? I don't know that I was so pointed. I think the idea is, it's like, well, why does somebody lash out violently? It's like, well, they feel as if they've been pushed too far. But not everybody does that. And that's the key element that I also think the film is missing, because it doesn't really, you know, it definitely pushes the character towards violence, but it's, and like, this is something that he could have done. He does have a lot of violent outbursts. I did see a number of discussions about that, like, oh no, he didn't really, you know, clearly things pushed him this way, and there's some truth in that, but he does have these very visceral and physical reactions, like he has these physical freakouts. So for me, at least, it wasn't a giant surprise when it eventually turns, you know, homicidal, that rage that's bubbling up and been bubbling up inside him the whole time. So yeah, so I think the film captures the feeling of kind of going mad and why that might happen, you know, just the, you know, consistent deluge of awful coming your way. And yeah, that will break some people, and that makes perfect sense. But there are a lot of aspects in terms, at least for me, in terms of like mental illness that are not directly addressed. And it feels like, you know, you could make, there's a bunch of places to make points. So for instance, I loosely addressed it in my review that the movie makes a point about throwing out the idea that Thomas Wayne could be Arthur's father. And he confronts him about this, and, you know, which would be very pointed, because in the film, Thomas Wayne goes on television and says that the Joker killer, the guy that kills the Wall Street guys, is just like, he's a loser, doesn't try hard, he's a nothing. And so it would be very pointed if that's true, because in essence, he created this loser, and his absence also contributed to where he's at. That would be a very poignant thing to do. And now granted, they're using it, Thomas Wayne felt like kind of one of these intentional, oh, look what we're doing with Thomas Wayne, you know, kind of one of those subversion, you know, very overt subversion, but it could have been very effective. But instead you find out that actually, no, it was just something that Arthur's mother imagined in her head. And I thought that was kind of not a missed opportunity, but it's also one of those things where it's like, oh, well, that kind of puts it all on her. It doesn't really put it on him. So that's at least where I got to on that. But like I said, in terms of evoking feelings, that made sense to me. That perfectly makes sense to me, because I definitely can empathize and sympathize with the feeling of like, okay, you know, another day of just everything barraging you. It's just beaten down. And one thing that I think it would be more interesting to look at this movie is just how it addresses how poverty and lack of income can kind of build upon itself. So it's like, okay, well, you know, so if you don't have money for this, you can't, you know, you can't do this. And then I think that's something that could have been addressed in the film, but again, it's not. It's usually an action that's so decidedly, I don't know, like, for instance, one of the main reasons he gets fired from his clown gig is because he is carrying a weapon on him. Now, it's semi-justified that he's carrying a weapon on him, because he has been jumped by, you know, some kids, and then is getting charged for the sign that he'd lost. But he doesn't have to take this gun, and he decides to have the gun on him in a children's ward, and then it falls out, and it's like, well, what the hell are you doing? And he gets fired. So, which makes perfect sense, because you cannot carry a weapon like that, even with this, you know, the highest grade concealed carry permit, to a children's hospital ward. So, and the scene even plays it for a joke. So, that was something that didn't work for me. The other thing that I noted, a lot of the comments that kept coming back, is that I mentioned that it irked me, somebody who's seen the movies that inspired Joker. The two movies that inspired it are Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, both Martin Scorsese movies, and both movies that are hard watches in different ways. The first, Taxi Driver, is basically Robert De Niro plays the titular taxi driver. His name is Travis Bickle, and he slowly kind of descends. He already feels kind of left out. It's established that he's a veteran, and he takes out this taxi job because it's something he can do, and he can kind of feel in control. But, you know, driving around the city, dealing with a bunch of people, it's just, he sees the dregs of everything. He sees the worst in people on a pretty nonstop basis, and it just starts to eat away at him. And his attempts to reach out to other people, he doesn't have the social skills. It's very clear that something's not right, basically. And so, like, for instance, he at one point attempts to go on a date with a woman who he's been socializing with, and he takes her to a porn movie. And so eventually, and obviously that's very off-putting, and she kind of kicks him to the curb after that. And it becomes this man's slow descent into madness. And so that's where you get you talking to me, because he starts buying guns, he starts training himself like he's an assassin, and becomes very involved in these violent power fantasies and this idea that he can save somebody, particularly a young prostitute played by Jodie Foster in the film. He believes he can save her. And it all builds to this very, it all builds to, you know eventually there's going to be an outburst of violence, but it's just a matter of where and how it happens. And it does a very good job of, one, deconstructing those violent power fantasies, and two, just kind of showing you, you know, how something like that can happen. And the second movie that it's invoking is King of Comedy, which is all about Robert De Niro, who is an aspiring comic who wants the limelight and who has made a number of attempts to end up on this late night TV show unsuccessfully, and decides he's just going to kidnap the host so he can end up having his, 15 minutes. And it is a black comedy. It is a dark comedy that nobody... almost nobody has seen, especially in the realm of Scorsese, because most people think more gritty and violent, but it is a comedy. And it's interesting is that the TV host is actually played by Jerry Lewis, who's actually quite good in the film. And then Sandra Bernhardt's in it as well, but it all pays off with, a monologue and kind of an awkward set where, so those are the, and then I'm sure you can hear those elements as they pull in. How they relate to each other and how they lead into this film and the end result. And what I found very interesting is that when I brought that up in my review, and people who did take the time to read it before responding, perfect, thank you, they said they had never seen these films. And I think that's probably not the most telling, but I do think it is a very good reminder that not everybody's framework for a movie is the same, or when they're coming into it. So I'm probably going to know more reference points than the average moviegoer, and more, just generally more films. So I might take a look at it and like, oh, okay, I know what they're doing, or that kind of thing. I know what that's referencing. It's kind of like if you, for instance, film geeks, when they watch The Untouchables, know that the big shootout in the train station is a riff on the Odessa Steppe sequence from Battleship Potemkin, the very old Sergei Eisenstein film. But I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, that's an amazing scene. I've never seen anything like that before. I'm sure that was something that came up even at the time. And it's just interesting where that, I think that's where that big divide happens between critics and audiences, because critics generally try to have a working knowledge as much as they can of movies, and audience don't have an obligation to do so. So it'll feel fresher and newer to them. So I did think that was particularly interesting that divide happened. So that was the second big takeaway that I took, was that a lot of people, hadn't necessarily seen a movie like this or capture this feeling before. And for those, if you really liked Joker, I would recommend visiting Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, and I would see if it shapes how you think about any of those, or what you come away preferring. Because I do think Joker is less designed not to disturb you as much. Taxi Driver is. It's made to be like a slow motion train wreck, whereas Joker just is kind of like a descent into madness, but it's a little more sympathetic and empathetic, versus Taxi Driver, where you're kind of seeing like everything that you're seeing, you're like, oh no, like it's just everything feels wrong. So I'd be interested to see what people would say, how they felt about the movie after they've seen the movies that inspired it, which is, I think, is always an interesting point to go to. I mean, there's plenty of movies that have, the phrase I always use is cribbed, which just means, kind of take bits and pieces. Tarantino is very famous for this, because his movies are just littered with techniques or elements that he has borrowed, quote unquote, or stole, as he often says, from other films. And it can either enhance your appreciation or it can decrease it. It all depends. I think if it feels like a ripoff versus homage, and that's a very fine line for some people, because a lot of people will, there's plenty of people that'll look at a lot of Tarantino's stylistic elements and be like, does he have his own thing? So that's something that's definitely very interesting. And the final takeaway that I had was that for a lot of people, it was just something different for a comic book movie, which completely makes sense to me, because I think, as much as I don't have a ton of interest in origin stories for every single hero or villain or what have you, unless it's kind of core to who they are, I think a lot of a lot of people are kind of tired of, you know, the big bombastic action-packed comic book movie. And so to see so much interest in what is essentially just a character study, a period character drama, and to go out in droves to see it and to like kind of take it in as something completely different, I think is very interesting. Like I said, the stylistic elements didn't work for me as much. Like I said, I said in my review that Todd Phillips has pretty clear limitations, and he seems to show up a lot in this film. He seems to rely a lot on Joaquin Phoenix dancing in slow motion, and, you know, kind of a dipping, spinning camera, and a lot less on, you know, unique shots or unique setups. And then the dialogue can often be very clunky, at least from my perspective. And I know Phillips co-wrote the script as well. So, in terms of comic book movies, I think this is what part of the reason why Deadpool was such a big deal, because you have this subversive, R-rated, comedic take on the genre, which has a sincere heart, but it's still this, you know, if you're tired of the deluge, well, not deluge, but if you're tired of the kind of the media saturation of Marvel movies and DC movies and every bit of things, and you kind of, let's say you saw Batman versus Superman, and you're like, you know, I could go for something dark and gritty, but I just want it to feel, you know, more grounded and personal and not kind of absurd and all these weird CGI elements and that. I can see why this would appeal to a lot of people. But yeah, those are my three biggest takeaways. Like I said, I'm always up for more discussion about films, especially, you know, even differences in opinion. The one thing I will note is that I say this all the time, is that your reaction to a movie is entirely subjective, and you can try to build consensus about a film, but my goal is, when I review a film, is never to provide judgment on anybody who likes it if I don't like it, or, you know, say that, oh, you're dumb and stupid if I do like it and you don't. That's never the intent. I think it is far more interesting to kind of piece apart what you do or don't like about a film and why. I think just saying, oh, this is good, this is bad, is very simplistic and silly to me, compared to connecting on a personal level and kind of sharing why a film means a lot to you. And like I said, one of the big reasons Joker didn't work for me as much as it did for other people was because I had seen movies like it before. And so I couldn't, you know, as much as I could sympathize with the lead character, I've seen different versions of it that I liked perhaps better, and that's going to shape, like I said, it's a very personal framework that not everybody has, so always keep that in mind. I think that's one thing to keep in mind. I've written about this a lot in the Real Talk segments about how if you ever feel like, oh, critics don't seem to get the movies that I get, most critics have a very different framework. They usually go through a lot. They're usually going to notice things that other people aren't going to notice. So for instance, you know, I always find it, you know, fascinating that if I start to notice a lot of technical details in a film, I can usually tell that it's not immersing me. Technical details are usually something I piece together when I start to kind of piece together, like, a good example would be like action scenes. I've done breakdowns of action scenes, and one like the Kingsman action scenes that Matthew Vaughn puts together, and what makes them so distinctive and engaging, like the big church shootout. That's a great example, because it has all these stylistic elements, but in the moment, all I really came away with was like, this scene is a phenomenal, like, brutal piece of action filmmaking. And then it takes a lot longer to kind of think about, okay, what makes this work or not work? So that's something, like I said, always keep that in mind, that if somebody doesn't like a movie, they might have a very good reason, for it. And if they don't, then, or they can't articulate it, challenge them to do so. Because my favorite example recently, and I'll shout out to my friend Tess, who I did a review of Annabelle Comes Home, one of the Conjuring franchise movies, and she mentioned that she loved all but the first Annabelle movie, and I said that I enjoyed most of them as well, minus The Nun, which I was kind of so-so on. And Tess said she really liked The Nun because it reminded her of a D&D session. And I'm like, that is awesomely nerdy and also a perfect reason to like a movie that I would never have. Like, not because I have anything against D&D. All my friends who play D&D are awesome. It's just never something I've done, so I don't have a frame of reference for that. But that's a perfect example of how one small thing can tweak a movie to, you know, to either good or bad territory depending on what your experience is. So, like I said, almost all opinions are subjective. Like I said, unless it is blatantly offensive to people, the kind of people it is portraying, then I think you can pretty much defend liking most things, almost anything. And that's where we get guilty pleasure movies. My wife Sharon asked me a question recently. She said, okay, like, what's a movie that a lot of people don't like that you do? And it was interesting because I do note that I often find myself towards general critical consensus. Every now and then I'm a dissenting opinion, but one movie that I really liked and I actually rewatched recently was, I like Constantine with Keanu Reeves. I really liked it. The more I thought about it, the more I, there's clear elements that just don't make sense. Or, you know, comic fans hated it at the time because Keanu Reeves doesn't try an accent, which I'm like, don't have Keanu Reeves try an accent. If you've seen The Devil's Advocate, you know that doesn't go well. But in terms of this just, you know, kind of, you know, surly demon hunter, and then we've got Rachel Weisz in there, and I can try to justify it, but most people are gonna be like, this is a very dumb movie that squandered a very, you know, very good series of comics that I've read. Rest assured, I've actually read the Hellblazer comics that this is all based around. But anyway, like I said, it is entirely subjective and everyone's free to your opinion. And I've had people talking to me saying, like, I really liked it, but I also will want to rewatch it based on what you've said. And I think that's actually something that is the hardest thing to do and something I encourage you to do all the time. So if somebody says, hey, this movie didn't work for me because of this framework, then take a look at it. Challenge your opinions and see if you get stronger in it or worse with it. So that's kind of where I've ended up. Like I said, it's a movie that I was so on. Like, Joaquin Phoenix's performance is fantastic in the film. I think it's definitely award worthy, but I will be cranking my head if I see it in the screenplay, best picture, or best director category, though there's a chance it'll end up in all of those. So that's probably the extent of thoughts that I have about Joker at this time, but let me know what you think. Feel free to comment or message me. Let me know what your opinions are on the film. If you loved it, if you're so on it, if you hated it. I haven't heard anybody say they hated it. I've heard a couple people say that they hated it, but nobody within my realm. It's more been like professional critics and stuff like that. But let me know what you think. This has been episode 26 of Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe this podcast wherever you can find it. And don't forget to join the Facebook group, Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie World, for the latest blog posts and discussions. Hope to see you there, and thank you again for listening.